Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello to Sandra Sutter.
Hi, Mel. Hi, everybody.
You call yourself the head honcho gnome of Gnome Road Publishing, or something like that.
The top gnome.
Top gnome. I knew there was something. Yeah. The chief of staff, top gnome of Gnome Road. And I'm really honored to have you here. And yes, it is a very difficult time here in Israel. And we're in the middle of a horrific war that we didn't start, and people don't understand us. And we feel isolated, and we're going to put all that aside right now, unless there's an air raid siren, and talk about the light in the corners, which is children's literature. And you are one of the bright lights. You have your own publishing house. I would be honored if you would tell us all about that.
Okay, where do you want me to start? And thank you, first of all, for having me.
I'll tell you exactly how to start, if you wish. Talk a little bit about Gnome Road. And this Mishigas, we call this in Yiddish, Mishigas, this crazy idea that got into your head after being a counselor and a lawyer and an author, published author. And you wake up in the morning and you say, oh, I haven't had a publishing house lately. Run us through this, Sandra.
I sometimes tell people, I don't know if you've seen the movie Legally Blonde with Reese Witherspoon. And having been an attorney in the past, I think this line is so funny. When she goes to Harvard Law School, her ex-boyfriend's like, you got into Harvard Law School? And she's like, what? Like, it's hard? Like, she just woke up one day and decided to go to law school. Like, that's kind of how I think about going into the publishing business. It's kind of like, what? Like, it's hard. It is hard. It's very hard. But it was one of those, you know, decisions that I'm like, okay, I'm all in. I'm going.
Was it just something over coffee on Tuesday morning at 10:45?
No, I think, you know, a lot of it was looking at a role that fit me best in the publishing world. The background I do like to write. I like to draw and I like illustrations too, but I can't do it very well. But I realized, having been a counselor and a mediator and a lawyer in the past, all those things, I'm really one of those people who likes to bring people together. And I like to create kind of something bigger than myself. It's not just all about me or, you know, one thing that I did. And I wanted to be able to give those things to other people. You know, this is what we can do together. And it's funny because my daughter was actually asking me a little bit about what were you like in high school and what kind of things did you do? And I was like, well, I was the yearbook editor, you know, my junior and senior year, and had been on yearbook freshman, sophomore year. And I thought back, I'm like, gosh, I loved designing and planning and doing all those things even back then. And I just hadn't even thought about it so many years ago, because that was quite a while ago, but it just kind of was in my blood. So I think I just naturally gravitated, you know, I did the author thing, and I had written, I had been exposed to the process of illustrations combining with my words, and I really liked it. And I was working with a lot of authors and illustrators in the KidLit community that I just really enjoyed their stories. So I thought, let's work on bringing this together. And so having kids that were young as well, you know, I looked at the things that they would read and then maybe discard and not want to read again. And I thought, I really want to capture those books that I think kids want to read. You know, they're going to hold on to and say, no, I want to read this again, or read it to me again. Or they go and show their friends. And especially my kids, they take the Gnome Road books and then they go and show all their friends, you know, look, oh my gosh. And they love it when a book is available before it actually comes out. You know, I get my copies, whether it's just from the printer to look things over, and they take it to their librarian, they take it to their friends and say, look at this. This is a great book. And here's why. That's what
how
I want.
How old are they now?
My son turns 11 in less than 2 weeks, and my daughter will be 9 on December 1st. So
they still love picture books?
They still love picture books. And, you know, I work with some teachers, and, you know, we have babysitters that are now teachers, and they are even in fifth grade teachers. They will take something like Animals in Surprising Shades, you know, Tango Red Riding Hood. They're learning those you know, fables or folk tales and poetry. They use those even in fourth and fifth grade. So it's not that these kids don't still love picture books, because they do. I think sometimes we just tell them, you need to move on to, you know, chapter books and things like that. But kids actually still like to read them and enjoy them quite a bit, even at those age levels.
Absolutely. So you talked about Susan Johnson Taylor's brilliant book, Animals in Surprising Shades. And that's how we met. Thank you, Susan. And you just have good news to share. Shall I share the news?
Oh, you shorted out. I'm sorry, you shorted out.
You have good news to share about Susan's book.
Oh, good news to share about Susan's book?
Yeah.
This one right here.
Yes.
Well, it's done really well. I know what you're referring to. There's all kinds of things that go on behind the scenes that I can't say out loud, but this I can say. Yeah, I was telling you earlier that I did not have a prior copy of, I'm sorry, my computer's doing something, a prior copy of this. I had just gotten this from the new printer, because this is part of a second print run for this book. So it's done well. That one's got a second print run. A couple of others do too. So we're feeling pretty good about that one. It's done really well.
Sandra, Susan's been on the show with this beautiful book, but can you show a couple of spreads? It's such a wonderful book. Mm. Maybe read your favorite poem.
Oh, gosh. No, you can't make me pick favorites.
You said I could ask you anything.
Well, I will say that I love the blue-footed booby spread. It's really beautiful, and I would love to get down to the Galapagos someday and see these. And a lot of it's because of this book, and, you know, reading it. And I think there's just so much to learn.
Well,
on
one second, read that poem, please. It's such a short and beautiful one.
Okay. The blue-footed booby. No candy hearts or rose bouquets, no string quartets or moonlit gaze. For ladies seeking true romance, it's all about his clumsy dance. So, and it's just, it's beautiful. And you know, Susan's words are beautiful. And then Annie Bax, who did the illustrations, she just made these beautiful, realistic, but yet, you know, illustrated versions of these animals. And it's just a gorgeous book. Susan is beyond talented. There's more I could share about Susan, but I can't. So I won't. but her book's done really well, and I love working with her, and I plan on having many more years working with her together.
I wish that for both of you. She's wonderful. And among the other recent books that you sent me, I fell in love with the tango Little Red Riding Hood. Show us that one.
This one. Tango is, I love tango. I knew the minute I read it that I really wanted this book. And Rachel Hobbs, the author of this, just does a lovely job of walking us through kind of that traditional format of the story, but supplies quite a unique twist. And Caro, Carolina Vasquez, who did the illustrations, did such a great job with lighting and with kind of setting the mood, but also making it light and less scary. I mean, there's some pages that look a little frightening, but then they're not as much. And, you know, we see some of the tango movements, some beautiful details in there with the patterns that Caro brought in from the borough that is in Buenos Aires where the tango came from. So it's a beautiful book, has a great twist at the end, which you said really blew you away. So
it was a real curveball, because she lulls us into the situation, you know, where it's just another fractured fairy tale, and then bang.
Yes.
Right in your face. We won't give it away, but all your books are lovely. This one really literally threw me for a curveball. So, and it's got a lot of Spanish and a lot of back matter. So this would be a book that I insist that people purchase today.
It's wonderful. Yeah. Tango Red Riding Hood. What I really love about it is the Spanish is organic to the book. And by that, I mean, it's included in the text. And if you don't know Spanish, it's meant to use the English to understand it through context rather than, you know, on the page, we're defining what the word means. This is really written for anyone to pick up and understand the Spanish words. But it also comes from her background and experience. So we wanted to include a little bit of Argentine culture and understanding that as well. So there is a glossary in the back with some more explanation about some of the things in the book to help people who maybe.
And there's another thing that I want to shout out on your behalf. People ask for diverse cultures and diverse geographies, but usually they mean purchasers who exist in the States. And there's a lot of Mexican people in the States, so we'll have a book about Mexico. And you've gone to Argentina. You know, there aren't millions and millions of Argentinians in the States. So I thought that was really special. That's just me. So I really, really love that book.
Can I say one thing about that?
You can say two things. You're on, okay. It's your show.
Rachel did not know.
One second. I forgot to introduce me. I got so excited.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I introduced me. Hi, everybody. I'm Mel Rosenberg. I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel, the New Books Network. Marshall, please splice this to the beginning. And I'm here with wonderful Sandra Sutter, who is the chief gnome, the top gnome of Gnome Road Publishing. Nice to have you on the show, Sandra.
Thank you. Yeah. We're just starting again. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Go back now to Argentina.
Okay, back to Argentina. So what Rachel didn't know when she submitted this particular manuscript, one of the first ones I read, by the way, when we opened Gnome Road, I, as a little girl, so my parents would take, we lived in kind of rural Colorado at the time, but my parents liked to take me to plays either in Denver or to the next town over that was a little bigger and had an auditorium. And one of the plays they would take me to was Evita. And, you know, the Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, that one. Yeah, I loved Evita.
Continue, por favor. I know that
you're saying no. But anyway,
the truth is I never left you.
Yeah, I love Evita. And I always wanted to go to Argentina. And so I got this and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a book, that is set in Argentina and, you know, tells more about the culture and has the tango and music. And it had everything I loved, and she wouldn't have known that about me, but it just hit us, you know, a spot that reminded me of my childhood and something I love. So I was so thrilled that, she entrusted me with the story and letting me make a book out of it.
That's wonderful. Now let's talk about Gnome Road. How many, you publish practically only picture books, right?
Yeah, at this time, I really wanted to do a little bit more and broader, but there's only one of me. And
I'm happy because I live for picture books. So, you know,
yeah,
you had me, hello.
Yeah, I love picture books too. And I it's kind of the sweet spot for me. I just don't have the time to do more at this point in time, you know, so it's a matter of that. I have seen some chapter books that I'm interested in, and I kind of would like to do those, but right now it's just not possible. I cannot spread myself too thin. I'm one of those people who's like, you know, I've got to be fair to the people I've published, the people I am publishing, and I'm not going to overextend myself where I can't handle all the work. So that's really important to me. That's what I would consider like a boundary, like set that boundary so that, you know, I don't go too far and not have enough time to really focus on what I need to focus on. So yeah,
Now let's crunch on numbers a bit. And then we want to talk about authors and how to get past your submission wall. So, how many books do you publish a year?
So it's between 8 and 10, let's say that. The first year was a little bit different because I had intended to spread them out a little bit more, but part of my business model was having a distributor, like a full service distributor. And that's very hard to do without any published books. So by the time I did do that and had the materials ready to show them and everything, I really needed to push them back. Like I was like, I'm not releasing this without everything. I'm a planner. I wanted it to be as smooth as possible. So I pushed some of them back and rearranged them. So this year we actually had, I think 10 books come out total, but it will stay between 8 and 10.
Do the distributors who have such a critical job, we talked about that between you and me, do they have a say in the books that are coming out?
No, not really. They actually, I just got off a meeting with my distributor earlier this morning. We had what's called the national sales team meeting, where I talk about the spring list with them. So we do this like in the fall, I talk about the spring books, in the spring I talk about the fall books, and I'm really telling them everything, all the kind of details and marketing hooks that we have for each of them so they can go sell the books. So they don't really have input on what I take. But when I'm submitting my metadata and I'm submitting, you know, example images and the cover, they will give feedback on that. They have given some great feedback on a couple of books. Like I would submit the cover and they'd be like, oh, I think it would do better in the market if we did this or that. So we just go back and tweak it.
That's a fantastic relationship.
Oh, I got so lucky with my distributor. That's just a whole other story in and of itself. But I just kept talking to people and staying open-minded and talking to the next person and talking to the next person. Pretty soon someone was like, you know who you need to talk to is, and they put me in touch with the people over at Baker & Taylor Publisher Services, which is not Baker & Taylor, the big company. It's a full service distribution company that's kind of like a subsidiary. We just hit it off and they had the right program for me, like, you know, how they did things and who their main clients were, both in the trade and school markets. They do gift market too. So those really fit with the types of books I was making. And they liked what they saw, even though I didn't have anything published yet. So it really worked out nicely.
It's incredible. And even though you're a relatively small publisher, it costs a fortune to publish a picture book.
Yes.
Even if you cut corners, you're looking at tens of thousands of dollars. Even if you beg illustrators to charge half of what they normally charge the big companies, it still costs tens of thousands of dollars to make a beautiful book, and you've made many.
Yes.
So yeah. where did this gnomic gumption come from?
See, that's just that. It feels like a really long story. But
well, don't take too long because I have lots of questions.
Yeah. The short answer is I felt like it was my time to do it, and I have a husband who's very supportive in that way, but I had been very supportive of him in his career and what he does, and to the extent that he does it, he's very good at what he does.
Let's give a shout out to your husband. Who's your husband?
Yeah. His name's Wes. So he works on horses. He's an equine surgeon. He works on high level horses. So like he went through residencies and all kinds of stuff to get where he's at. So it was kind of like, okay, you're where you need to be now. I want to go do this. And he's like, go do it. And here I am. So, you know, we had that kind of relationship that it was time, and I went for it.
I think that that's beautiful. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Wes. I will tell him. Yeah, he's very supportive. And, you know, particularly when I first started out, he would read the manuscripts. He liked to read them too. Now there's just less time to do all of those types of things. But, you know, he read stories to my kids. So we've read since the day where they were born, both of them. And he had opinions on books, you know, whether we should ever read that one again, or the kids love this one. And sometimes he'd be like, I don't understand why the kids love this one. So, you know, we would talk about why the kids love this one and what it was about it. And so, you know, he saw the value in it too, and saw that it was what I wanted to do.
I love this rereadability and like focusing on what the kids, they're the most important reader response, even though they don't buy the book. Your approach, I think, is unique. Let's talk now some numbers for the authors, because you are a real traditional publisher. You mm-hmm. pay advances to authors, and you're taking a chance. How many submissions do you get a month from agents? Because usually you take submissions only from agents.
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer because I'm really not sure.
200, 2,000?
From agents? Yeah. No, not that bad. And I've filled up my fall 2025, or I filled up through 2025. So even agents, I'm telling right now, look, I'm not even looking at this stuff until maybe the end of the year, the first of the year, if you send it. I would really like to be open like one day, like I did this past year for submissions. I don't know if that's going to happen right now. I can't promise it. I don't know. Because I do have a lot more agents sending material in. I also try to take care of my nomies. You know, they are, I have some really talented writers and illustrators, that they still submit. They know they can submit things to me. And I have taken some of their material even for 2026. So being so small and having a good group that's already there, and then getting stuff from agents, it may make it very hard to have any availability on even next year's list. But I'll decide that. Probably around the beginning of the year. And that will help me decide whether I'm going to be open for a submission day. Mm-hmm. I do like to take new authors. I do like to take ones that are unagented as well as agented. I don't think agented necessarily determines any ability that you have to write. In fact, I've seen wonderful material at a lot of people from unagented submissions. And I hope people understand that, you know, you're having an agent doesn't say anything about the quality of your material. It just makes a difference on whether you can get in a door or not. It does. And that's
one thing. Isn't that sad?
It is. And I understand why too, because I can't stay open. Like the number of submissions I get, even on one day, if I say I'm open to submissions, it's a lot. Thousands.
No, how many?
Thousands. I would get thousands.
And from thousands in one day, more than 1,000?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oy vey.
So, I mean, and I really like to try to respond to everybody. Sometimes
hold on, Sandra. This is like a really interesting question here. Let's dwell on this.
Oh, I dwell on it a lot.
You were an author,
mm-hmm.
right? And you had a couple of books with I keep forgetting their name. Spork, Clean yeah. Fork, Blue Spork. And so you know how hard it is to get a deal with a traditional publisher. And yeah. I also know. But if you think that the agents don't do a good filtering job, and I'm not sure they do. Let me ask you this question. This is going to be a bit of a difficult question, okay? What are the agents really doing when they take 1 out of 1,000 manuscripts? What are they thinking? That this is a wonderful, wonderfully written story? Or that I can sell it to Sandra? What do you think?
I think it's a combination. It depends on the agent. I mean, I have really enjoyed working with a lot of the agents that have sent me material in. I have. I think most of them are really trying to do the best they can by the authors that they've got. And I don't know that they're not doing a good job of filtering. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just trying to say that there's a lot of good material out there, and it's not just through agents. You know, whether it's agented or not. And I want people to know that if you don't have an agent, doesn't mean your material is not good. But I do think it's a bit like what it is like for me as a publisher. It's some kind of connection with that story that, you know, the agent has some personal thing about them that connects to that story, and they feel something about it.
Well, hold on. Okay. So I want to focus here because I think it's really, really important. Okay. You love stories about Argentina. You love stories about cats, and you love stories maybe about horses because of your wonderful husband's career. So
I don't know about that. I don't ride horses.
Okay. let's just say that you love, if you get a story about autumn leaves, right? Then mm-hmm. This is going to do something to you, because that's what stories are, right? They either pull a heartstring or not. And you're not going to publish a book that doesn't pull your heartstring.
Right. That's absolutely right.
But in the middle, after the author has worked with the critique group and honed and written the manuscript, and the manuscript is not about autumn leaves, it's about snow, and it's a beautiful manuscript. Or maybe it's about autumn leaves, and you would love it, but the agent is a snow person.
Right.
So I've been in this for almost 10 years, writing and interviewing people. It took me about 8 years for my first traditional published book to come out. It's a real trek and a bitch and an uphill climb and almost impossible. But there's something wrong that you and I have to figure out, because you're a wonderful person. And if I am the filter, if I'm the agent, picking books that are connected to what I love, yoga, buttermilk pancakes, right? Then mm-hmm. I'm going to ignore really good manuscripts that maybe would interest you, because you don't want books about buttermilk pancakes. I'm going to shut up now.
Oh, well, I do actually like buttermilk pancakes, but I do. And I got a submission about pancakes that I really loved. But I still think it goes back to, even agents don't necessarily know what I love. And I will get things from agents that I'm like, this just isn't for me. And there's nothing you can do about it. It just, it isn't for me. even though it might be for them and they may really, really love it. Or they think, I'm going to take the example of the horses. They think, oh, you know, your husband, he's an equine surgeon. You must love horses. Nope. I do like horses. Don't get me wrong. They're beautiful animals, but I don't own any. Well, not here. I don't own any at my house. I don't ride any of that, anything like that. So yeah, you know, people might think I love horse rescue books or something, but that's not actually me. So they wouldn't know that. They might send it thinking that, but not know that. And agents are the same. What's resonating with them may or may not resonate with me. And a lot of it is me developing. I have to develop a relationship with them.
Sandra, the best books don't get to you.
The best books don't get to me.
I once made a calculation that if an agent gets things right 97% of the time, receiving 1,000 manuscripts a month, he's going to miss most of the good ones. Even if he's 97% right. Mm-hmm. It's just a numbers thing. So you have, I'm going to say, a few dozen submissions a month, because I have to guess, from agents.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A few dozen. And then you open up once a year and you have a deluge of one or 2,000 manuscripts. Mm-hmm. And from those, you pick 8 or 10. Mm-hmm. But you don't pick 8 or 10 because you have your stable of wonderful authors. So maybe you pick 3 or 4 from new authors, maybe 3 or 4.
Yes.
A year out of thousands and thousands and thousands of manuscripts.
Yes.
And you might not be getting the best ones.
I think I have. I love the books I have, but here's also the other thing I look at, you know, is I'm looking at what is best. I, you know, that's such a relative term. Best is what kids want to read, and not just one kid over here or this kid over there, like all kids. So they should have a variety of different things to read. I want every kid to be able to say, I like that book at Gnome Road. It doesn't have to be the same book. They all at least see one that they feel they love, right? So what's best isn't really like what we say is best, what an agent says is best, or even the KidLit community as a whole says that's the best book that we have this year. It's the best, you know? No,
I'm going to agree with you. Just because you and I think that Susan's book is terrific, but here you have the kosher seal of approval from children. And you're now running the second printing.
Right. Yeah. It is a great book.
But do all of your books sell out within a year? Are there books that you thought would do better and didn't? I mean, if you sell all your books, then I want to purchase shares in your company.
Not all of them have sold out right away. I do have a couple going into second printings. So you have to remember too that we're small. So our first print runs, especially this first year, were smaller than, you know, like the print runs I'm doing for the spring are a bit bigger because I know that we're running out of books on some of them. You know, others are a slower kind of build up that they are eventually going to run out, but that maybe not quite as quickly. So no, not all of them have. I think eventually all of them will. It's just a little bit different. And this being our first year too, you know, there's definitely a progression from the first batch to the second batch, you know, because people knew about Gnome Road, just getting the word out there. So I don't want to like compare those necessarily to those because there's different circumstances, especially being first. But there are books. I think that this would be true for any publisher. They'll be like, oh, I think this one is, it's going to be the hot one that season. And then lo and behold, you're like, whoa, wait, that's the hot one this season. And it might surprise you a little bit what it's going to be. But I think overall you're looking at, are these appealing to children? Are they ones that they're buying and they, you know, continue to buy so that you're still having a good sell through the year? That's really important.
We can't predict it.
No. But let me just say, I got to get this one out. I love them all. They're all my book babies, but this one has done very, very well. I knew it the moment I saw the text. This is by Jen Afir Jasinski, and Anita Bagdi is the illustrator, who just beautiful job. But I knew the moment I read the text, I was like, it's a winner. And it is. I got a starred review in School Library Journal. It's done really well. A lot of them have. I've got other things around here, but sometimes you just see it and you're like, I have to, like Tango. Like I knew it hit a chord with me. So to speak, haha pun. So did this one. I played the piano as a girl, and I have a baby grand in my basement because I love to play, but I'm not good. But they wouldn't have known that about me. But I also, I will say all of my Gnome Road books, whether they were picked as a favorite in School Library Journal or not, when I read them, I was like, yes, I see what this can do. I can see how kids will really like this. And then my job as a publisher is trying to find the avenues to get it into the kids' hands. So there are, of course, are going to be adult gatekeepers that determine that. So, trying to explain to them how this fits in a kid's life. And then when the kid gets it, then they can, go with it. But I think all of them have that appeal. It's just certain ones might take off because the gatekeepers see the value in it too. And then it just might have a different trajectory than others.
You are the one who, as the top gnome, decides who the illustrator is going to be for each book?
Yes. Yeah, that is actually fun. Unless it's an author illustrator, that we've already decided they are illustrating the book. It's a lot of fun. And this is kind of the part I really enjoy, is finding the right illustrator for the text, like blending those two together, which goes back to, I think, what I was telling you earlier, that I was this yearbook editor and I had to design things and put them together.
I want you to segue now to your job as a counselor. I think of picture books as a marriage of the author and the illustrator, like in Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox families where, the parents pick the bride and you're under the chuppah and hello there. Hi, I'm George. I'm Rebecca.
Yeah, to some extent, yeah. Although, the authors and illustrators don't really squabble like kids would at all. So I also really like to work with, when I talk with people, I kind of get a sense of who they are first. I want to work with people that I think are going to be lovely to work with, because we're going to have a relationship for at least about 2 years until the book comes out and beyond. So I'm really trying to look for people that aren't just talented, but that I enjoy talking to. Sometimes they may or may not be, somebody who wants to be ultra chatty or anything like that. That's fine. And sometimes they are. That's not a requirement by any means. But all people who want to do the best job they can for a book and, bring it a life of its own. And I really like pairing up those illustration styles and the illustrators with the text. And, I feel like that's the most fun part of it. And especially when I see it come together and I'm like, yay, this is good. I actually have a little sneak preview. So the spring season coming out, one of the books that's coming out is The Imposter, and my printer just sent this. So if Laura Bauer's out there, Carissa Green right now, I have a copy of it that's just come in and I'm very excited about it. It is the cutest book. And Carissa just really brought the right illustrations to this cute, cute, cute story. The Imposter, it's adorable.
I would love to see the PDF of that one, because I have a feeling that I know what it's about. Sounds like a wonderful
book. It's so cute. And it has those moments in there that even parents are going to identify with and go like, oh yeah, I've been there, done that. So Yeah.
There's a lot of authors listening. Do you have any advice before I asked you again about your one day opening a year? Do you have any sage advice for authors, knowing that the odds are 1,000 to 1 against them?
Yeah. There's a lot to say there. You know, one reason I wouldn't open for submissions is I'm not going to put authors through that. I know what it's like, how much time it took and how much energy, emotion is put into sending a submission. So if I don't open, it's because I'm not going to put someone through that. And, you know, I feel it's a little disingenuous to be like, oh, we're open, but we're not taking anything. So, you know, I'm not going to do that to people. I think each publisher is different, and you know, what goes for one might not go for the other. For me, if you want advice on submitting to me, I'll give it to you right now. One is, don't submit to me if we're closed. It creates more work for me and for us in just pure organizational terms of somebody submitted something knowing we're closed. We're closed. I'm not taking it. There's a reason we're closed. Now I have this email in my inbox that I have to do something with, you know, and I'm one of those people who feels like I need to at least reply back saying we're closed, even though there's an auto reply saying we're closed. So don't do that. Really look at the books that have either come out already or that might be in the pipeline. You know, look at the website, because chances are if I have a book called My Piano, I'm not going to take another book on the piano because we're small. I mean, it's too close in time. We're small. Don't do that. I do like comp titles. It does help. Do I require them? No. Did I like doing them as an author? No, I did not. But they're helpful and gives me a sense of what the author thinks about their own material as well. And you don't have to tell me a whole bunch of stuff in the query letter. You just get to the point and tell me something about you. I do want to know. Some people submitting, I know you guys. Yeah. Hi. Thank you for always submitting. I love their material. I love to read their stuff. I know when I see their name, I'm like, this is going to be a good story, solidly written, that kind of thing. It might not be a good match right away, but I at least enjoy reading it. So just kind of follow the rules of submission. I have the rules there for a reason. So I like when people follow them. Yeah.
Well, you are a real magician. Being able to turn out such beautiful books with such a small environment is really miraculous. And now I think I have a better understanding, and certainly I hope the people who have been watching and listening to our wonderful conversation. And I'm going to ask you just one last question, because I want to help the 99.9% of authors who aren't agented and who realize that in order to get your first book published, you have to be better than 99.9% of the other manuscripts and lucky, both.
Yeah, luck is there.
So let's say, Sandra, I'm going to ask you my last difficult question. You open on February the 14th, 2025. It's also Valentine's Day, by the way. And you're open for one day. And let's say you only get 1,000 picture book submissions. I don't know why. It's easy for the numbers.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
Okay, let's say 2,000, but you're only looking for 2 new books anyway.
Right.
So you're going to read now 2,000 submissions, hoping that you find 2 good books.
How do I do that?
Yeah.
Well, it takes
Excuse
time.
Excuse me for asking.
No, it takes time. And I do actually go through and read all of those. So sometimes you can get a feel right away whether it's going to be the right thing or not. And I kind of have these different piles that it goes. I say piles; they're more like boxes that it goes into. And one is like this is going to be a no, you know, it's not going to work for whatever reason. Maybe it was, maybe they didn't follow the rules and they sent me 5 manuscripts. When I say only send one, there's a reason for that, you know? And I'm like, no, 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 you can't follow the rules. I follow the rules, except for maybe there might be a gem in there. So I can't help but not, you know, I look, but I'm probably, it's not a good way to start out a relationship. But
it's strike one.
Yeah. I think of, again, having been a counselor at one time, like you have boundaries and relationships and they've just crossed that first boundary. That doesn't feel very good. But then I kind of have this pile that's a kind of a maybe, like, yeah, this is good. It's good. It has potential. And then I'm kind of sorting them into that. But even when I have one that I don't think is going to be good, even before I send a reply that, a decline letter. I like to say decline, not rejection, because I'm not rejecting the person's work. I'm really just declining to publish it because it's not the right fit, but it's not a rejection because I don't think it's horrible. That's not it. But I do look at it
Sandra,
again.
Sandra, one second. Sure. Hold on. In all fairness, you were an author. A letter of declination is just like a letter of rejection.
I know how it feels. But okay. words do matter. They do.
Okay.
Right. And so from a publisher's perspective, I'm declining. I'm not rejecting. My intent is not to reject. And the only reason we feel it's, you know, rejection is because we've been told that's what the word is. It's a rejection. And so that kind of sticks and it drives this feeling and meaning to it. But I prefer to look at it a different way. And, you know, I'm declining that work. I'm not rejecting it at all. But I do look at even the ones that I've kind of decided, no, aren't going to be a good fit. I'd look at them again just to make sure that I haven't missed something there that might be a good fit, but it takes time. I mean, this is why, you know, publishers, we can't make a decision right away. We can't, there's just too much involved. I do have helpers. I can't say who all of them are, especially like on my acquisitions team, because I don't want people bugging them either, saying, can you get this to Sandra? That kind of thing. But I have to shout out to Bonnie Kelso. She does a lot of the social media and the graphics and helps with book design. She's the author of, she's the author of Nudie Gill, Poison Powerhouse in the Sea, and has Sea Smiles coming out this spring, which is the first of a series. Bonnie is amazing, and I work with her a lot. She's somebody on the Gnome Road team that I just want to give a shout out to. But so I don't do it all alone. I don't do it all alone. But when those submissions come in, because I'm the one who publishes such a small amount, I'm going to be looking at every single submission. I don't have anyone weeding them out for me yet. I've had people express interest in doing that, but I'm not quite ready to give up that control, which is one reason why I'm not opening for submissions at certain times, because I can't do that all.
Okay. And do you want to guess? Yes, you answered the question marvelously. Good. And I guess my final question, how many books to date? How many books have been published?
10, I believe. Okay. 5 each season.
And what about you, Sandra? You're an author.
Yes.
You've published.
Am I going to publish some of my own?
You send me a lovely Halloween book.
Yes, Stan's Frightful Halloween. Yes. So maybe there may be some things going on to make that happen at some point in time. Right now, let me say this too, to all you authors out there. when I started publishing and getting material in, I was like, man, my stories just aren't that good. I realized that there were so many talented writers out there. And, you know, I started to look at my own writing a little bit differently, thinking, oh, this could be better. Or I don't think I would choose this. You know, if it was me reading it, it's my own story. And if it's me reading it as a publisher, I'm not going to be interested in it. So it really changed how I look at my own writing as well. And there's just so much talent out there that, and I have such little space on my list that I'm not sure one of my stories is even the right fit for it.
You're such a kind and generous and giving person. But, you know, you could say to yourself, this is a great opportunity for me to become even better, because I think even great writers can always improve.
Oh, absolutely.
And now that you have published a couple of books of your own, and you've already seen 10 through the whole process, I would think that your writing, if you choose to find time,
right,
would be something that would be like hugely improved, because sometimes, I think part of the reason that writers don't succeed, like me, is that I get an idea and I say, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to be great, great, great. You're going to write it and you revise it and critique groups and whatever. And my mentor, da, 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 da. And it doesn't work. But one of the reasons it doesn't work is because I'm not the publisher. I can't see it the way you see it. But you can. So, all your little sprouting ideas, you can choose which are the ones to run with. I can't.
I do. It's funny you're asking this. I have about 5 of my old manuscripts like on my desktop right now that I was like, I should revisit these. And that's when I open it up and I cringe, like, oh my gosh, but we all do that. Even if you're not a publisher, you open up an old version of something and go, what was I thinking? Because your perspectives have changed or your experience has changed, what it might be. But I've thought about it. And if the right thing is there, the right time, circumstances, then yes. Yeah, I will. I have one that's open. It's not open on the desktop, but it's on the desktop that happens to have cats in it, of course, because I love cats. So, and I don't have a cat book. But here's the thing. I'm like, well, what if somebody sends me a book with cats in it that features cats? I should say features, because there's cats in some books. But what if they send me one that's better? I might want to do that one. So you never know. But it's on my mind. Maybe I have the ability to do it. I can.
Of course.
So it might happen, but I've really enjoyed seeing all of the manuscripts other people have. And there's just so many talented writers out there, illustrators out there. And I'll say one thing, the ones that really get me, when I get a good laugh, or a real like, oh my gosh, kids are gonna love this. Those feelings are, I don't feel I can top that with my own writing yet, but when I can, then maybe that will be the one.
And I'm sure you will. So Sandra, this has been wonderful. I'm gonna get shot now, not because of the war, but for overstepping my time limitations. And I'm joking because I don't have time limitations. We've been talking for almost an hour and it's been incredible. You have to go back to publishing and I need to talk to you. So we're going to say goodbye to everybody. And then you're going to leave and come back and we'll have like a little summary. Sandra Sutter, the chief top executive gnome of Gnome Road, a brand new picture book publisher with wonderful books out and more wonderful books to come. It was wonderful having you on the interview. You've taken my mind off of our horrific situation here. Bless you, dear. You're a true, what the Jews say, you're a mensch. That's a big compliment.
It is,
And Susan Johnson Taylor, when she recommended you, boy, was she right. It took too long. I hope that we'll be able to have another conversation next year. In the meantime, I'm Mel Rosenberg. What am I? I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And this has been wonderful. Sandra, go out and come back. We'll say goodbye. Bye-bye to all our wonderful audience.
Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Mel. Thank you.
My pleasure.